Bhaktaram,
Bhaktaram,
the beneficiary,
the beneficiary,
Chakna,
Yajna,
Yajna, of sacrifices,
of sacrifices,
tapasam,
tapasam,
and penances and austerities,
and penances and austerities,
sarvaloka,
sarvaloka,
of all planets and the demigods thereof,
of all planets and the demigods thereof,
Maha Ishvaram,
Maha Ishvaram,
the Supreme Lord,
the Supreme Lord,
Suridam,
Suridam,
the benefactor,
the benefactor,
Sarva,
Sarva,
of all,
of all,
Bhutanam,
Bhutanam,
the living entities,
the living entities,
Natva,
Natva,
thus knowing,
thus knowing,
Mam,
Mam,
me,
me,
Lord Krishna,
Lord Krishna,
Shantim,
Shantim,
relief from material pangs,
relief from material pangs,
Rishati,
Rishati,
one achieves,
one achieves.
Translation and purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Please repeat. A person in full consciousness of me,
a person in full consciousness of me,
knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary,
knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary
of all sacrifices,
of all sacrifices
and austerities,
and austerities,
the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods,
the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods,
and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities,
the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities,
attains peace from the pangs of material miseries,
attains peace from the pangs of material miseries.
Now the commentary. Ishi Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
The conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world. But they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is a beneficiary in all human activities, and man should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord, because he is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than he. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Vitasvatara Upanishad 6-7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaram Paramam Maheshvaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is a master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one can understand these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are subordinates. No one can attain perfect peace only in Krishna. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. Om Ajana Timandasya Chananjana Shaka Shakshvan Militam Yenatas Mahishi Vavayama Shichitanya Munarbistam Staptam Yena Bhutani Shvam Rupakadamyam Dadati Svaparanti Vandiyam Shri Rishi Yudha Padakamlam Shri Gaum Vaishnavam Sam Shri Rupam Charizatam Sakanaragnatam Pitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Svabadutam Parijanacaitam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sakalita Shivshakam Vitamsa. Hey Krishna Kuna Sinodino Bandhujat Pati Gopesha Kopra Kanta Rad Kata Namastati. Tapta Krishna Gaura Hiradi Vrindavanashvi. Vishabhana Sudadevi Pranamama Haripi. Vankha Kalpta Vishakri Prasan Vivisha. Patnam Pavana Vyavashnam Yonahanam. Shaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Jyadvaita Kadada Shiva Santi Gaura Bhaktavina. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Namo Vishnupada Krishna Vistaya Bhutan Shimati Bhakti Vinata Swami Tinamani. Namaste. Sarasvata Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sinyavadi Paskatari Dushatari Srila Prabhupada Ki. So, the verse with four lines, huh? The first is Bhaktaram Jahya Tapasam. How do I pronounce Jahya?
If it's the Bengali style, it's Jagya.
Jagya.
But the sort of the standard sort of in most of India it's Yajna.
Yajna. Yajna tapasam. Yajna. Try to remember Yajna. Yajna means sacrifice. That Krishna says all sacrifices and austerities has to be done for my pleasure. That's one may say, oh, that's quite drastic. Everything for his pleasure. But the second line explains why. He's a proprietor of everything. If you are the proprietor, then you have the right for enjoyment, right? Otherwise, if you try to enjoy the property from someone else, what's going to happen? Not so good. But these two lines, they contain the most essential, I would say, on the neophyte state, for those who are conditioned, this is most essential information. But one misunderstands that. If one does not understand the difference between the body and the soul, that pleasure for the body and pleasure for the soul is different. Pleasure for the body, eating, drinking, and sexual pleasures, that intoxication. This. People think that's my happiness, that's the happiness of the body. And to give happiness to the body, one must exploit the resources of this material world, to exploit them, enjoy them, to enjoy them. That's mostly the mentality of the people. Say, go in the street and you ask what's the purpose of life, they will say, enjoy, you live only once. But how do they know? They only live once. And their enjoyment is for the body, which is very temporary. Soon we don't have a body anymore, we get another one. But spiritual enjoyment is enjoyment of the soul. And my colleague will speak on that. The first stage is to get peace, right? To get happiness to the soul. Krishna says, without peace, no happiness. That's the first stage to get happiness, peace. And that peace does not come by trying to enjoy the senses, but by pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna is different than pleasing the senses. Pleasing the senses is that, exploiting, trying to take for my pleasure. That. And what's the result of that? Trying to enjoy in this world without considering that Krishna is the proprietor and the enjoyer. If we think ourselves the enjoyer, I'm going to enjoy. If one has that mentality and forgets Krishna, then one is under the law of karma. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yisam spasya bhukha dukriyonga evate atyantavan dekantya ramate Buddha. What's the first
one? Nateshu ramate Buddha.
Ramateshu?
Nateshu.
Nateshu.
Ramate.
Ramateshu.
Buddha.
Buddha. Yeah. So the intelligent man, they have concluded that if I want to enjoy in this world, what is the result? Suffering. That's the reaction given to you to my material nature. And the wise man said, this is not recommended because what's the use? It's temporary. The valuable is something eternal. So that's the result if we act with that consciousness that we are the enjoyer and the proprietor. But spiritual life means acting with the understanding that Krishna is the proprietor and the enjoyer. And that means only giving for Krishna. Oh, that's interesting. On the material platform, like I give this to my colleague, I say, this is yours. He will say, thank you. I don't have it anymore. I gave it. Right? But if I give to Krishna, then I get Krishna. That's a spiritual law. If I speak about Krishna, I give Krishna away. Like I speak about Bhagavad Gita, and I try to explain this verse. And I may sound like, oh, he knows it, yeah, he knows it, but it's not like that. I'm a pretender, but if I explain it nicely, then Krishna will give me gradually the realization of what I explain. What I try to give away, I get. That's interesting. That's spiritual. Spiritual mathematics. And material mathematics. Material, that's, yes. 1 + 1 = 2. 1 - 1 = 0. But the spiritual platform is different. 1 - 1 = 1. And 1 + 1 = 1. That's interesting. You never lose. What you give away, you get. That's interesting. You give all your love to Krishna, and Krishna gives you so much love back. And that's if you. But of course, to give love to Krishna, first we must have shanti, right? That's my colleague who will explain that. But so if I give shanti, if I give to Krishna love, I will feel love in the form of ecstasy of the heart. That. So that's a different experience. But first we have to come to the platform of peace. And Krishna in the third chapter explains. He explains, Shaknakta karmano yatra lokuyam karma bandhanam. If one acts for my pleasure, Krishna says, for the sacrifice for me, then there are no karmic reactions. But Krishna says, for me. Because everything should be done for the pleasure of Krishna, because he is the proprietor and he is the rightful enjoyer. So that's the basis of Krishna consciousness, understanding. Krishna is the proprietor and the enjoyer. Therefore, I do everything I do as a sacrifice for him, for his pleasure. Because further, Krishna explains, it's in 3:13, Shakya, 3:13, in the first word. Chakya Shistasino Santa Munchate Sabakilbisai. Munchate Trampa Papa Yebchantat Makara Karanat. So Krishna says, if you prepare food, you must first offer it to me as a sacrifice. Because Krishna is the proprietor and the enjoyer. We do it for him. Otherwise, when you prepare the same food for sense enjoyment, thinking we are the proprietor and the enjoyer, you eat only sin, Krishna says. Verily, only sin. You get karmic reactions, you will get suffering and so on. That's interesting. Consciousness is different. Consciousness. With what consciousness do we do things? If we always think of I and mine, that's false ego. False ego means these two things, I'm the enjoyer and the proprietor, because we are not. That's Krishna's position. That's we are envious of Krishna, trying to take his position. And these are the building blocks of false ego. I and mine. I'm the enjoyer and I'm the proprietor. But that's false. That if we think like that, if we act with that consciousness, we will become very bewildered and unhappy. Because no peace, so much trouble is ahead. But if you do it as a sacrifice for Krishna, with the right understanding, then yes, then we will eat prasad and become purified by it. That and we still enjoy spiritual food and no reactions and becoming purified. Otherwise, only sin. Krishna further explains that, yes, he says, if you offer sacrifice to the demigods without knowing that factually it's meant for me, not for the demigods, that is meant for me, then that's avidipurvikam. That's wrong. That's wrong worship, Krishna says. Because I'm the proprietor of everything, and so whatever benefits these demigods give, it's given by me. It's coming from me. So there also Krishna confirms, yes, if one does not recognize that I'm the enjoyer and the proprietor, but goes to the demigods, that's not very intelligent. And if one thinks, Krishna further says, if one does not do this sacrifice, but just lives for satisfaction of the senses, One lives in vain for nothing. That's quite a statement. For nothing. All giving pleasure to the body, being the slave of the body and the mind. This craving for sense gratification, it makes the mind completely mad. It makes one more and more identify with the body, more and more thinking oneself as the enjoyer and the proprietor. But Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. These are important elements of spiritual knowledge. That's factually, if we know these two things, we can make advancement in Krishna consciousness, if we apply it. Because if you think, oh, this is mine, you become attached to it. And then that what you think is mine becomes a source of trouble. You become attached because it changes. You have a brand new car you think is mine, and someone makes a little scratch on it. Oh, you feel the pain, right? You feel the pain. Because you think yourself the proprietor. This is Krishna's temple. This afternoon someone came to look at the roof for repair. I don't think it's my house. If I would think my house, oh, so much money and I have to work for it, that you become sick. But no, it's Krishna's money. It's Krishna's house. So that's Krishna consciousness. Understanding, I'm not the proprietor of the house. I'm the secondary proprietor. Krishna gave me this house, but it's his house. I have to take care of him on his behalf to please him. It's another consciousness. My children are not my children, they are Krishna's children. And Krishna gave me the service to educate them in Krishna consciousness. So it's a different, yeah. I have a beautiful garden, beautiful rose. This rose is created by Krishna. It's his rose. So I want to offer it to him. That's completely different from the sense of I'm going to enjoy things. A devotee always thinks, how can I please Krishna? How can I please the spiritual master? It's the same thing. So that's the basis for advancement in Krishna consciousness. And so, if we understand just this verse and apply this in our lives, then what will happen? My colleague will explain. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Maybe I can use the...
Oh, yeah. It's officially now. And the talk.
So I always like this verse. It's a very interesting verse. Because it's something that Srila Prabhupada called the peace formula. Everyone is trying to be happy. Everyone is trying to be at peace. And someone keeps coming along to disturb my peace. And that's always a source of stress. It's always a source of difficulty. So there are a few places where Prabhupada gives the example, or Krishna in the Gita gives the details of how peacefulness is required. And most people, if you ask them, would you prefer to be stressed out or would you prefer to be peaceful? They would probably say, prefer to be peaceful. Maybe at times a bit of stress is quite exciting, but if you're stressed out all the time, then that's not very relishable. So someone gave me a nice explanation of what stress means the other day. They said, stress means when you're trying to be something that you're not. Now think about that a little bit. It's a bit subtle, that explanation. Because many people will work hard if they have their... you know, you can look at different people. For example, someone could be an office worker. And they might sit all day in the office and have a pile of paperwork. And at the end of the day, they might be exhausted just from the labor of doing it. But because their mind is suited for that kind of work, it doesn't cause them disturbance. They'll feel tired, but it won't disturb them. Whereas you put someone else in the office who doesn't like working in offices, they're going to be stressed practically after a couple of hours. And they might be working hard too, but they'll actually be uncomfortable with it. Different people are cut out for different things, and they've got different abilities to do that. Some people are strong, they're fighters. So the occupation as for Arjuna in the Gita, of a warrior, as a soldier, that's a very good occupation. But you send another person into a battlefield, maybe someone like me, who's not particularly strong, then I'll be struggling probably from the first moment till the end. Now a person who's fighting there, you know, the stuff these army guys have to go through, boot camp and everything, it's tough. Has anyone been in the army? You done any training or anything? It's tough. In the beginning, they really give it to you. They make you work hard. Those senior to you, they give you a very hard time. they take every chance to discipline you when you're not doing well. But it's there. It's rigorous training. It makes you tired. You're exhausted at the end of the day. As soon as you go to your bed, you fall asleep immediately. But you're happy. You've got a few cuts and bruises, but you're happy. Whereas you put the office worker in that situation and they're wanting to run away after a couple of hours. So I like this definition. Stress means, it doesn't mean your life is going to be easy. And stress-free doesn't mean your life will be easy. But it means your mind will be relatively peaceful so that you're not unduly disturbed. Because after all, that's the problem, isn't it? When we become actually disturbed, where everything we're doing is just another irritation in our mind, then our life becomes more and more miserable. You stop enjoying stuff. You stop enjoying all the opportunities there are. We stop appreciating. In another class, you may remember we were speaking about all the wonderful items in nature. You were there for that, I remember, Silas. And we were talking about how to see Krishna in his creation.
Yeah.
And you know, he says in the Gita, I am the taste of the water, I'm the fragrance of the earth, I'm the light of the sun.
The ability in man.
Ability in man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just walk around the garden, you'll see so many things, and you can understand this is some of Krishna's beauty. But if we're constantly stressed out, if we're unhappy, if we're unsatisfied, because we're constantly trying to be something that we're not actually cut out to be, then that means our life isn't fulfilled. And sadly, in today's day and age, there's no real understanding of what it is that each person should do to make themselves happy. So one of the items in spiritual life is to, or as we read Krishna's conversation here with Arjuna, is to try to understand ourselves. What do I like? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What am I meant to do in this life? And here we are given some instructions that are meant to take whatever we do and somehow connect them for a higher good. You know, sometimes people they do some boring job all day long and they wonder, what is the point of it? I spoke to someone who was working in a factory packing items. And I spoke to another chap who was delivering packages for Hermes or someone. Hermes don't have a good reputation for delivering packages. But both of them were telling me that they are fed up with it because they do so much hard work. They're not particularly stressed, but they do a lot of hard work. And yet at the end of the day, they wonder, what is the purpose of it? For them, they haven't made that connection. my work and my purpose in life. So sadly, in today's world, everyone is simply taught, okay, do these few standard things. Okay, you're born, you go to school, you study hard, you pass your exams, then you go to university. You study hard, you pass your exams, then you get a job. Then you sit there working at your job for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And at the end, once you've earned a little bit of money, you go to the Bahamas or somewhere and just retire. Just lie on the beach. That's basically the program that's given to us all. Now it's a, I don't know, it may work for some people. For most people, life doesn't quite work out that way. First of all, that whole forced system of studying a load of stuff which is not even part of our nature becomes very, very disturbing for many people. Then the idea of having to work for 20, 30 years, raising kids, having a family, doing all this responsible stuff everyone is meant to do as an adult, that phase often brings a lot of stress in itself because of all the expectations. And then when they get to 65, 70, half the time they realize they've actually got no money left because they've blown it all while they were younger. And then at the point of which, at the point that they are 65 and 70, they also realize, hang on, my body doesn't work anymore. I used to be able to run up a mountain without any trouble, and now I'm thinking I'll go for a nice mountain walk in the Alps or somewhere, and I can't even climb up a few steps. So the body stops being useful as someone gets older. So this little idea that everyone's developed as to how my life is going to work out generally doesn't result in happiness for most people. They're stressed right from the beginning to the end. And part of the problem is that people haven't worked out and they haven't taken instruction from Krishna and other competent persons who've also lived a long life, and they haven't worked out what they themselves should be doing so that they can be peaceful. And that's a very important discovery that everyone needs to do just to make it through life. Because if you're stuck in the same thing, or you're stuck trying out a range of different things throughout our whole lives and not gaining any satisfaction from it, that ultimately is not fulfilling. So Krishna gives a lot of information, and we'll touch on some of these points, how we can mold our lives, how we can progress our lives so that we are actually happy. After all, we want to be happy in life, isn't it? Who gets out of bed in the morning and thinks, right, today I want to be miserable? Anyone here? No one, right? You get up thinking, right, today is a chance for happiness. Today I'm going to do this and this and this, and I'm hopefully going to be happy. And at the end of the day, you may have succeeded, you may not have succeeded. But Krishna gives here a little introduction to this idea of peace. He says in chapter 2, one who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Sometimes we think that just peace itself is happiness. You know, when the weather is really bad, we're just wanting the sun to come out. And then that for us, we think it's great, happy, freezing cold is finished, the sun is out. But actually, it's not anything great. All it is just the misery part has stopped a little. So the platform of peace is sort of an in-between stage between misery and actual happiness. To be actually happy, we have to be peaceful. Otherwise, the two things are contradictory. You can't be stressed out and happy at the same time. So this is a prerequisite to be peaceful. And here we're given one very strong encouragement that it's a very simple recipe, actually. That to be peaceful, you need to have transcendental intelligence and a steady mind. And the way to do that is to connect to Krishna. As Maharaj was mentioning, Krishna is the supreme proprietor, the enjoyer of everything. And we may be secondary enjoyers or secondary proprietors in that we may be the secondary owner of the house, depending on our consciousness. So if we understand that Krishna is the main person, he's the main man, and if we offer our love to him, if we offer whatever we can, some service to Krishna, then we will experience happiness. We will experience peace, like nothing else in this world can do. Because after all, everyone has the experience in this world that happiness generally happens when you're exchanging interactions with another person. Generally. Isn't it? Everyone forms groups, whatever type of person you are. If you're an old lady who goes to church, you'll have your old ladies group where you spend time together. If you're in the army, I gave that example earlier. If you're in the army, you'll have a group where the army guys all get together. They all go for a drink. They all have fun. Everyone forms groups, whatever they do. At the moment, there's this whole thing about Harley Davidsons and Mr. Donald Trump, our friend Mr. Trump. He's trying to tax everyone. So Harley Davidson, which is one of the iconic American brands, they're thinking of shifting their production out of America to other countries. And this has obviously got Mr. Trump very upset, because he's thinking, this is an American brand. This enjoyment is meant for Americans. This is our national pride, our national prestige. But yes, so persons will then form a collection, a group around a shared interest. So for some, it'll be biking. You'll have groups. You'll have the Hells Angels. You'll have lots of different biker groups. Whatever it may be. You'll have a volleyball team. They play volleyball and then they form their own little association. You have a football association. You have a knitting club. Where'd you go? Whatever someone's desire is, whatever someone's activity is in life that gives them pleasure, they want to do it with other people. Isn't it? It's just natural. Because just being on your own is a very boring prospect. There's only so much fun you can have with an object, even if it's your bike, even if it's your latest Ferrari, even if it's some gold item you've just purchased. There's only so much enjoyment that can give you, because that's an object, and we're a living being with consciousness, with a mind, with intelligence, with emotion, with desires. So that can only be exchanged with another person. And this is why spiritual life is so important. Because in this world, we try to have these exchanges with other persons. And they work for some time. But then after a certain amount of time, they fall apart. Our best friend at school, maybe we had a fight with them. Our colleague, who we thought was going to be loyal and was going to be supporting us throughout our career progression, turns out to be someone who's a backstabber. It happens in politics all the time. It happens in relationships, family relationships, work relationships, school, college, club relationships. That's the nature of this world. That relationships that we have, they are good, we need them, but they're never as perfect for a long period as they're cracked out to be. Yeah, he just needs to rest against the wall, I think. Doesn't he? Yeah. No, it's tough. I hope I'm not sending you to sleep, though.
My apologies, sir. My back is very painful.
I can understand. No problem.
I do apologise for interruption.
No problem. No problem. So that's the problem. That we are trying to get that lasting happiness, that lasting exchange, that lasting reciprocation from others around us who are never going to be able to give that to us. So the actual person with whom we can be fully satisfied, completely satisfied, is Krishna. When that love is exchanged with him, when that interaction is exchanged with him, and then with our friends, that interaction is also a shared experience. That is the way to actually have meaningful interactions, relationships in our own lives, when we actually have Krishna at the center. So placing Krishna at the center is really the root of this subject. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam, the root enjoyer, the root, the central feature of any enjoyment is Krishna. Sarva loka maheshwaram, he's the central master for all people. Now that's actually, as Maharaj said, it's actually quite a relief. If we understand that Krishna is actually the one in charge, and I'm one of his agents, I'm one of his children in one sense. You know, we understand God is like the Father, and we are all his children in one sense. Well, that gives a great deal of relief. That gives us a lot of peace. So putting Krishna back in the center and structuring our life around somehow trying to do something that pleases Krishna is a very, very fulfilling prospect. So there's a few more verses here at the end of the chapter which I wanted to just touch on. Some more secrets here from the Gita, from chapter 2. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. We've always got thoughts coming into our heads. The whole day is full of desires. I want to do this, I've got to do this, I must do this. I've got to do this even though I really don't want to do this. A whole range of desires pop into the mind. Now most of those desires are nothing really substantial. It's just the mind has just concocted something. And for the whole day, we are effectively behaving like slaves and just trying to fulfill whatever desire just popped into our mind. So far from actually being in a position of control, we are actually in a position of being a slave. And that means that we will always be suffering, because the desires, the speculations, the thoughts will never stop. They will always continue to flow in. However, a sober person can look at all these thoughts, can ignore all the useless ones, and can focus on the ones that will actually bring upliftment. And such a person alone achieves peace. So that's quite a good tip. If we just look at what's going on inside our heads, we might be relaxed, we might be stressed. Most thoughts are not that helpful most of the time. Some of them are. So an intelligent person learns to focus on something that's going to be for their upliftment, something that's going to help them actually be happy. Not that they keep doing things that will bring them distress continuously. Maybe not today, maybe not next week, maybe next month. Actions that we do now have a consequence in the future. And as the Bhagavad Gita explains, that actions that we do in this life have a consequence in future lives. And that's secret, that's hidden. Most people aren't aware of this. We can generally see that if we do something in this life, we'll get the results soon or later. You know, if you study hard, you might pass the exams. If you spend all day and night trying to make your business work, yeah, in a few years' time, you might be rich. But there's something happening in the next life as well, which we can't see because it's not clear to us. But that next life is simply a transition. And the soul, the essential spirit soul, which is separate from this body, simply gets a new body at the time of death. And it's described, the analogy is like discarding an old garment. You know, when you've got an old shirt or something, you just discard it when it's finished and you get a new one. So similarly, we discard the body and we get a new one.
And this cycle goes on and on and on. And our situation in our next life is going to depend on what choices we've made in this life. So it is very important that we make the right choices. Otherwise we'll either be enjoying based upon our choices, or we'll be suffering. We normally like to enjoy, we generally don't want to suffer. So by actually learning to control the flow of random desires into the mind, we actually very intelligently make our progress in this world very nice. And so this is one of the important verses as well. The whole of this last part of this chapter, in the next verse, Krishna says, a person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. Sounds quite a tall order, as Maharaj says. That sounds quite tough to do all this. But it's not really tough. It's actually very enjoyable. It's actually very nice to give up something that causes you pain. It's not a difficulty. If something causes you pain, you just release it and you feel happy. So these items, we think they're making us happy, but they're not. We know that our pursuit for enjoying again and again and again is actually not always bringing us enjoyment. We're putting a lot of energy into it, but the end result is that we're still unsatisfied. And that's when a person starts to wonder, what is it that actually brings one peace? A person needs to become a little more thoughtful. What is it that will actually bring me satisfaction and peace? And then we start taking instructions. Then there are many options available that if one follows such a lifestyle, if one actually just tries to connect with the Lord, then it says here they can enter into the kingdom of God, a place where there is no suffering, a place where there is no distress. Everyone is at ease, everyone is happy. No trouble. That's a brief sort of snapshot of peace. It's all connected to these points that Maharaj mentioned. Putting Krishna right in the center of all our activities. Involving Krishna in our life somehow. If we just involve Krishna, sometimes just by talking to him, sometimes by chanting, sometimes just by thinking of him even, then we experience a change, and that change comes quite quickly. We experience some connection. And we start to see our life moves in a way that is actually for the better. So I think that's probably where I should stop.
Oh, thank you. That's an interesting note. You start with asking this question. You remember who joined the army?
Yes.
But, you know, we both are in the army. Oh. Army of Lord Chaitanya.
Oh, yes. Yes, the army of Lord Chaitanya.
When these soldiers come together, they don't go for a drink. They go for kirtan to please Lord Krishna.
Yeah.
Because this chanting that purifies our heart from this I, mine. I think myself the proprietor. I think myself the enjoyer. What makes us think like that? Because we think we are the body. So this is essential knowledge, which with that knowledge we can come to the platform of acting as a spirit soul and not a body. That acting as the body, we want to give enjoyment to the body. But that's craziness, because we are not a body. So, what's the point? That unless we understand that, no peace. That, yes. And if you don't want to hear that, yeah, you break your peace to pieces. That, no chance for happiness.
Peace to pieces, yeah.
That, but it's simple. That acting for the pleasure of Krishna, engaging in his devotional service, and automatically you cannot engage in devotional service if you think and enjoy and the proprietor that's not devotional service. Devotional service means understanding, give pleasure to Krishna. About it, Krishna, from within my heart, will give me peace and happiness, the greatest happiness, ecstasy of the spirit soul. Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to have you here. I hope that you will come back soon and stay again a few weeks with us to enlighten us. So if there are any questions, please.
Just thinking, how you always try to be happy in this world, different ways. There's this notion, especially with successful business people making money, doing well, that they're going to enjoy their retirement. Another point came up then, well, when you're old, well, how much can you enjoy? I remember one example. I went to see my aunt and uncle one time. They were fairly elderly. They're quite successful, and they were retired, and they were quite well to do, lived a nice home, everything they needed. But they were still talking about winning the lottery. So even though people were talking about enjoying in their old age, still there's still being Maya alluring them to go on, get more, make more money. So they got into this type of mode where they can't be placed out of it. So this maybe just ask either of you, maybe like comment on that. How is it that people, is it just Maya again enticing them and tricking them that they can't even enjoy in their old age because they're still restless and they want to still make more money?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, that's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, that avitam jnanam etina jnana nitya vairana. That's the first effect. That if you want, I think I'm going to be successful and enjoy, that it covers your intelligence. You come into illusion that I'm the body and everything will be all right. Yes, everything will be all right. I will be successful and I will die happy. Interesting prospect. But Krishna says in the line 3 and 4, maybe you could explain 3 and 4, Duspurna
and
Alinacha.
Duspurna and Alinacha.
Yeah, we are in a shift. So.
I've been handed the baton.
Two for the price of one.
Yeah. Chapter
9, did you say?
No. This is
Duspurna and Alinacha.
Chapter 3 at the end.
Yes.
Kamesh Kodesh, just afterwards, two verses further. Avitam Jnana Metima, Jnana Anitya Vaina, Kamrupina Kantiya, Dushprana Malinya. Kama is there.
Which number is that? Let's find it.
Yeah, just a bit before.
I'm a bit forgetful with the numbers of these verses.
39.
Perfect. Yeah, thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. I think that's the answer for your question. As Prabhupada says here, fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel. If there's a fire burning and you keep adding fuel to it, it doesn't put the fire out. It burns even stronger. So this analogy is given pouring ghee or something on fire or adding more wood. So with this prospect of enjoyment, as you mentioned, your aunt and uncle, they've effectively lived a life where they actually have everything. They don't need to worry too much. But they've lived a life where they're constantly trying to enjoy more and more and more. And whatever level they get to, they're never actually going to be happy with it. They're trying to, because consciousness has been covered by lust, which is the eternal enemy, it said.
They've tried to get enjoyment from so many material objects. And they keep failing and they keep succeeding. They keep failing, they keep succeeding. And that process, even succeeding, doesn't mean the desire goes away. We know what it's like. When you've got something, you then want something more. If you're a, you know, if you've just got your first job, you're then looking for a job which pays you more. If you become a millionaire, then, yeah, you want to become a multimillionaire. After some time, that becomes boring, so then you want to become a billionaire. And you never, most people would think, if I had £1 million, I would be happy. Most people probably would be. But the problem is, they won't be, because as soon as they get the £1 million, they'll want 2 million. When that's finished, they'll want 1 billion. So that's the problem. Whatever level we get, unless we actually learn to be satisfied with what we have, whatever we have, as our life progresses, it will always be a source of tension for us. That I want more. I want something else.
May I ask, for escaping from materialism then, as a young adult, is there a level of which one maintains material life to a degree and still somehow escapes from material? The economy from material. So, is it a necessity to take spiritual life fully on board rather than in steps? Will you ever escape from the material problems if you're taking things in steps? I think the easiest way for me, I struggle to try and put my thought into words, but...
No, I think it's clear.
I struggle to, to escape.
Yeah, it's clear.
But I don't know how... shall I go full... Does one must completely devote himself? Or can he still find peace with only partly devoting himself?
Well, that's the beauty of the process, and Maharaj can certainly add something to that. That this is... This process is... No one turns into perfection at day one. Myself, I'm still practicing. I'm still trying. I may look, you know, from the dress and everything that I'm fully 100% devoted. But certainly there's a lot of work still to go on up there and in the heart. A lot of transformation to take place. A lot of progress to be made. But whatever little I've tried to surrender to Krishna, something little I've tried to do for him, that has brought me a lot of pleasure and satisfaction. That I can honestly say.
So a man must take it in steps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything we do goes in steps. And you, the simplest step we can do is to chant. Just sing Krishna's names. As we have a kirtan, as we had at the beginning, we have one at the end of the class as well. We sing the Lord's names. That's a very simple process. Anyone can do that. Doesn't require any changes in our life. We just chant the Lord's names. That's one way where we say to him, Krishna, I would like to explore this possibility. I know you are the object of my ultimate love. Let me try and offer you something. Let me chant your names for your pleasure. Hmm. Something very simple we can do.
So that within itself then, would that mean that... any material pleasure whatsoever is going to lead to pain?
No. Now, this is also what's interesting. To deal with this topic, yep. I'm giving a very brief answer. But actually, there's chapters 3, 4 and 5 are dedicated to this. How we still act, how we still function in this world, while at the same time trying to connect to the Lord. Now, what happens is, it's not so much that the material pleasure itself is a problem directly. The problem comes when that material pleasure we think is the end goal. Right? So if we have this idea that, okay, today I'm going to have some pleasure, tomorrow I want some more pleasure, and that all there is in my life. That's when the problem comes, because that means you don't aspire for anything more. And if you just limit yourself to that temporary pleasure that you could get today, tomorrow, next week, whenever it is, then you won't actually have the chance to connect with Krishna properly, because you'll just be satisfied on that level. So within the practice of spiritual life, devotees come in all shapes and sizes. As a monk living in the temple, this is my particular sort of direction, where I'm spending all my time practicing different parts to do with spiritual lives, to do with spiritual life. But people maintain their professions, they maintain their trades, they go on holidays, they do for all intents and purposes, completely normal people. But when they have time, when they have their consciousness, they try and offer that to Krishna. They try and say, Krishna, I want to do something for you. What can I do for you? And that really is the step. Krishna actually discourages Arjun. You see, here in this example of the Gita, Arjun is a warrior. His job is now, the fight's just about to begin. That's the setting for this. Now you imagine the army's just about, the British army, for instance, they're about to start a battle.
I think I read this passage just today.
Yeah.
Is this, as he commands, the world's eating us up?
The world's?
Eating us up?
Yeah.
Okay, this is amazing. Yeah, yes. He wants to tell every soldier, the king wants to tell God that he doesn't want them to go to war because killing these people is like killing himself. Could I be wrong?
No, that's exactly it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got confused because I weirdly symbolically took this as almost allowing you to eat meat, even though it's so karma reaction. Because it's almost like saying to live is to cause pain, so regardless, you might as well partake in pain. So I got confused.
That can be a source of confusion, and that description is given in chapter 2 especially.
Yeah.
That Arjun's job is to fight, and the problem is that he's become scared. And if you're a soldier, you're a trained soldier, and you're on the battlefield, when the commander gives the order, you just got to go. At that point, that's not the time to philosophize.
Yep.
So he's actually doing what you could say is dereliction of duty, or he's actually, you could be court-martialed for that, for not actually fighting when he's meant to fight. Now, that's his job. Now, just to encourage him to actually do that. Now, obviously, there's a whole spiritual context to this war. It's not just a typical fight, you know, one country's trying to invade another country, they just want their resources. Or they want to steal something. It's not. There's like the whole Mahabharat story is there before. How this thing is all built up. How much effort they've tried at peace. Now the point is that they have to fight. And Arjun's got to do his duty. But he's trying to chicken out. And Krishna's saying, okay, just now take it a step further back. Forget the situation that's in front of you. Look at it from a pure spiritual point of view. I'm a spirit, well, he says to Arjun, you are a spirit soul. All of these persons on your side are spirit souls. All of the persons on the other side are spirit souls. Your argument for not fighting is that you will be killing them. But actually what you should know is that no one ever dies. So now these aren't instructions that you give to a person who likes to kill. These are instructions given to Arjun who's trying to avoid doing his duty. So you can say it's a bit of a pep talk. Look at it philosophically, that yes, we are spirit souls. This body changes, garments are thrown off. So on that platform, when the cause is just, when the cause is spiritual, you've got God himself, who's the ultimate definition of what is correct and what's not, telling you that fighting has to happen now to reestablish correct principles in the world. Then really Arjun's position is not to... not to disagree with that.
I must apologize in case, and I don't want to ask too many questions, but I become confused by it because it seems almost like anything that almost the sin of man is then can be plausible.
Sin of man
can be plausible then because it's like, oh well. If everything's dying anyway.
So that's why this point I mentioned, that this is happening under Krishna's instruction.
Oh, so long as it's only...
Yes.
Okay, sorry, my apologies, sir.
Yeah, that's the difference between this and a normal fight.
Yep.
You couldn't use those arguments to encourage the warriors. But for Arjun, in this particular scenario with the Mahabharata, and this now being an attempt to re-establish spiritual situation... Because if you know the history, the opposing side that they're fighting, they've done a lot of stuff which is seriously wrong.
Yeah.
And to have them continuing to rule and in a position of power is a very dangerous prospect. So with this, the actual task of keeping peace means you have to remove these characters from their roles. And so only in this situation could you really use that philosophy. Because otherwise it's dangerous, as you say.
Yeah.
Anything negative you want to do, you can justify it by saying that you're going to die anyway.
Yep. And then they're not the body in the first place.
Exactly.
Okay, I see, yeah.
So it has to always be that philosophy.
The quote was not a guide for life then, it was just a guide for a moment of a man.
Yeah.
So
it's philosophically true.
Yeah.
Philosophically it's true that we are spirit souls. But how we use that knowledge is a different thing. If we use that, and we use that in a sense that we can do what we like, then that's not using the knowledge correctly. Because if we're going to accept that part of the knowledge from the Gita, we also have to accept all the other knowledge that comes in the rest of the Gita. And if we read that in total, we'll get a comprehensive picture of it. So that is a fact. Sometimes you have to just state things black and white. The fact is, we are spirit. We've got nothing to do with this body. But we are here in this body for a reason, for karmic reasons. And if we don't behave correctly while we're in this body, in our next body, there's going to be consequences to that. There's going to be karmic consequences to that. So it is still important what we do. And so here you've got direction coming from God as to what is the correct thing to do, for Him only. But Maharaj, maybe you want to add to that? Or?
It's a warrior, that's right. But the opposing party are all criminals. They just transgressed all religious principles. They were murderers. They tried to murder the Pandavas, to poison them, to harass their wives and strip them naked and.
They stole the whole kingdom from
them. So they are criminals at the other side. And he's a warrior. He has to punish them. Like, suppose you have a police officer and he sees someone breaking in a house. And the police officer thinks, well, that I know this person. If I'm going to arrest him, he's going to get a criminal conviction.
Jail.
Yeah. He will get a criminal record. His mother will be very unhappy. So he will never get a job anymore. So no, I'm not going to arrest him. Is that a good police officer, you think?
See, so it's understandable because it's like there's two paths to it, you know? There's a spiritual and there's material, and I understand if one must commit.
Yeah, just keep by that example. Is that a good police officer? No, it's not.
Not material.
He's going to be sacked because he's not doing his duty.
Yeah.
Arjun must do his duty as a warrior. He must punish this like a police officer does.
Yeah.
And like that, we have also to do our duty in life. Whatever we do, we should do without these two things we learned today. Not thinking we are the enjoyer and not thinking we are the proprietor. Otherwise, we end up in trouble. And about stages, Krishna speaks about stages in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 12th chapter, he makes it very clear. And that's important information for you. 12.8. Just fix your mind on me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. So Krishna says, you think of me always and know that I'm the proprietor of enjoyer. With that intelligence, you serve me always. That's a perfection. But then Krishna says, if you cannot do that, in the next verse, he says, if you cannot fix your mind on any wave deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. That's what we try to do. We follow these regulative principles. Means no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, and no intoxication. And we chant Hare Krishna. We have a sadhana. And by that, we will become purified and develop a desire. And then when you have the desire to please Krishna, it's simple. But it can take a whole lifetime to do that. But that's the standard for living in the temple. Nobody stays in this temple if they are not serious in following these four related principles and do not chant 16 rounds. Nothing they can do here. But that's already a high level. That's a high level. And so, Krishna says, if you cannot do that, what to do in the next verse? If you cannot practice the relation of Bhakti Yoga, just try to work for me. Do some service for me. Because when you work for me, you will also gradually become purified. That's the system Varnashram we call working for Krishna. So if you cannot follow this sadhana, you do service for Krishna. So we are engaging here, many people in service during the Sunday feast and so many things. But they don't live in the temple. They are not ready for it. For that you have to follow these four related principles and so on and have a sadhana. And Krishna says, even if you cannot do that, then just engage in cultivation of knowledge or try to meditate on me, by such renunciation you get peace of mind. So Krishna gives many options. If we can,
it was just the five ones you focus on, gambling, intoxicating. Could you please repeat just?
Yeah, this has to do with the four main principles of religion. First is mercy. If you eat meat, fish or eggs, that's not merciful to the animals.
No.
So, that's against mercy. Intoxication is against austerity. Austerity is the other principles of religion. You must be austere. If you drink, you cannot control your mind, no austerity. And cleanliness. Cleanliness, taking a bath in the morning. And cleanliness in mind. Avoiding illicit sex, thinking of women and sex, that's a problem. That's against the religious principles. And then truthful. Truthful means accepting Krishna's words and not thinking what I think is good for me. That's in the illusory energy.
Not for man to believe that he, not for man to take pleasure in his own idea of pleasure?
Yeah, sure. That is, our likes and minds, likes and dislikes in the mind are inventions of the mind. And that's false ego.
Yeah.
We think I like this, I don't like that. That's false ego.
It's not real?
No. That's your false idea. When you die, that's all gone. Your real ego is, I want to love and please Krishna. I'm a servant of Krishna. But that you can only attain when you say, I stop trying to become happy in this world.
Okay.
That's the first thing you have to do. As long as you don't stop to try to become happy in this world, you never get the peace. You never come to spiritual life. Stop to become. We don't have to become anything in this world. We have to realize who we are. Our real ego. And that's the point of spiritual life.
It's the giveaway, not the obtain.
Giveaway, yeah. Only giving. What do we have? What do we have to obtain? It's all temporary in this world. But what we can obtain in this world is by giving to Krishna, we get spiritual realization. We get happiness, peace, renunciation. From this renunciation comes peace. Renunciation means not being not active. Renunciation means everything using in Krishna's service. Understand, he is the proprietor, he is the enjoyer. That is renunciation. We have Arjuna had also in the beginning a false idea of renunciation. I'm becoming a beggar. But Krishna says, no, renunciation is your body, mind, words, everything you have. I gave it to you, it's mine, I see. You use it in my service. You bring, these are all energies of Krishna, represented by Radharani. Our point is to bring Radharani together with Krishna, bring Sita together with Ram. That's spiritual life. Material life is Ravan. Take Sita away from, I'm going to enjoy, but it belongs to Ram. Yeah, we have to stop here. We are a little over time. Thank you very much for listening so patiently. Jai.
Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Jai. Jai.